Chattering Mess. This is one of the comments in the news segment there before we turn to Yah's testimony that I wanted to make a quick response to. There was evidently a survey that showed that 65% of Americans thereabouts thought that their taxes were fair. And that number was down 4 or 5% from the previous year. When we don't consider information in context, information has no value to us. There's a great example, information out of context. The reality is in America that 65% of Americans pay 2% of the total taxes. So if you were paying, if you were part of 65% that were paying 2%, why wouldn't you think your taxes were fair? There's a reason they think they're fair, because 65% of Americans are either not taxed or they're grossly undertaxed. It reminds me of the problem that was manifest yesterday all over the airways when the experts were universally trying to associate this bombing with right-wing extremists and saying that the fact that it's Patriots Day in Boston, the fact that it's Tax Day in Boston, the nature, the crude nature of the bomb, the fact that it was symbolic and not designed for maximum carnage, all tells us that in likelihood it was a right-wing extremist. Out of context. Then they would say, you know, it could be very similar to the Oklahoma City bombing. Out of context. What is the context of this kind of bombing? 99% of similar bombings have one common denominator. 99.9% of similar bombings, similar attacks, have a common denominator. Why not discuss it in context? And yet not a single person mentioned the fact that 99.9% of similar kinds of attacks, backpack bombs with ball bearings put in a civilian area to wound people who obviously have nothing in common with the perpetrator's issue, that 99.9% of similar bombings are perpetrated by fundamentalist Muslims. What's the problem of providing context? You're afraid that people might understand, and if they understand, they might respond differently to patriotism and indoctrination and to politics and to military schemes. Is that the reason? Is it the same reason the United States won't release the 6,000-page investigation that it paid to conduct of the CIA's use of torture? I want to return to our review of Yahweh's focus on seven and the Shabbat, because the Shabbat is one of those things, everything associated with seven, and the celebration of the Shabbat and the role that seven plays is one of those things that provides context, it provides a perspective for which to understand Yahweh's instructions. God made this common denominator or thread weave through everything that he had to say so that we could make connections, so that we would have a framework from which to understand our history from the time we left the garden to the time the whole earth will return to the status of the, that we might understand how each 1,000-year era will play out, what the seminal events of each time will be, and how we might use this to understand that there is a very specific plan that is being followed. Yesterday, we went through each of those eras, beginning at 3968 BCE, when Adam and Chawa were forced out of the Garden of Eden for having been beguiled by Satan, in exactly the same way that Satan uses Paul's writings to beguile so many today, twisting what God said, presenting himself as the credible authority who should be respected, not because of his own ideas, but because he plagiarizes and twists and distorts what God said to give him credibility that he does not otherwise deserve. And how we can go through thousand-year increments that bring us to 2033 as the time that he will return. All based upon the perspective that seven provides. Now, if you're a Roman Catholic, a Orthodox Christian, a Protestant or evangelical Christian, attending Sunday worship services the first day of the week, on behest of a pastor or priest, believing that you are doing something good that is pleasing to God, sorry, but you would be dead wrong. Yahweh does not want to be worshipped, as worship has no place in a familiar relationship. And Sunday is the Lord's day. The Lord, according to Yahweh, is Satan himself. Remember also, Barak, God, bowed down so that he could lift us up. Well, that is the Shabbat. That is the meaning of it. That is God's promise to us. That's why Shabbat and seven, Shabbat in Hebrew, are terms that work together. We make the connection between promise and seven, as the Hebrew words themselves convey both. That connection explains what God's promise is to us. Sunday is the Lord's day where Bel and Baal, Ra and Zeus, Jupiter and Saturn, Dionysus, Osiris, Tammuz, Bacchus are all worshipped. It's the day Mithras was worshipped, which is why Constantine, as the founder of Roman Catholicism, declared that everything that ought to have been done on the Shabbat is now transferred to the Lord's day, to Sunday. It's when all wannabe gods, satanic impersonators, bow, want mankind to bow before them. Sunday worship is why Yah called Abraham out of Babylon. Should you be wondering why Christians, the Christian religion is uniformly wrong on this day and its purpose, Sunday versus the Shabbat, worship versus relationship, you will find the answer in Yahusha's prophetic revelation letters to the assemblies. God calls General Constantine's promotion of Paul's conception, better known as Roman Catholicism, or Universalism, the seat of Satan. He says that Catholics are Jezebelian, that they are exalting and married to Bel, Satan, the Lord. They are married to the whore of Babylon, which is another satanic reference. And then he says they are dead, poisoned by the devil's deceptions. And poison is a term that Yahweh uses throughout his Torah, prophets, and Psalms to speak of the effect of false prophets, the effect of those who claim to speak for him, who mislead. He calls Paul's, who he refers to by name as Shaul, he refers to his poisonous pen as being deadly. The Roman Catholic Church, misguided as they are by Paul, became so anti-Semitic and so anti-Scripture, no sun god worship, no so pro-sun god worship, so pro-religion. They made it a crime punishable by death to observe the Shabbat, the seventh day, manipulating all the things required on that day so that they would be transferred to the Lord's day on Sunday. It was interesting to hear the idiot that sponsors SRN News, the commercial from Laity Lodge, talk about how advice is only valuable if you listen to it and respond to it. And yet this deceived Christian has no interest in listening to the advice of Yahweh as he lays it out in his Torah. And so, like so many Christians, has no interest in the advice of God, which is what he was inferring, and yet he is completely opposed to it. You know, while we're at it, the Roman Catholic Church also made it a capital offense to gather on any one of Yahweh's Moed Mikre. A capital offense means that if you do it, they will kill you. The called out assembly meetings of Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, seven Sabbaths, trumpets, reconciliations, tabernacles were replaced with satanic substitutes like New Year's Day, is based on the Roman god Janus, who is the replacement doorway. St. Valentine's Day, a misplaced devotion. St. Patrick's Day, inebriated by the wrong spirit. Lent, which was a derivative of the Babylonian religion, where Tammuz was killed by a wild boar, so the 40 days that he was tortured, there would be Lent in honor of Tammuz. There, of course, is Palm Sunday, because they have to be palms. They were associated by the Egyptians with the gods, and it, of course, had to occur on a Sunday. And yet with Yahusha, when he came into Jerusalem 4 days before Passover as the Passover lamb, it was actually Branch Monday. Not that the day of the week is meaningful. Machday Thursday, of course, is the basis for the Eucharist and Communion, as opposed to the celebration of Passover itself, Good Friday, which replaces the fulfillment of the Passover promise. They completely, of course, ignore the Shabbat. Don't even have anything that they say occurred on that day. They go directly from Good Friday to Easter Sunday. If there isn't anything more blatant than that in terms of Christian animosity for the things that are important to God than that, I don't know what it is. Of course, also on their calendar, in addition to Easter Sunday, named after the Babylonian goddess, you have the Assumption of Mary, which is also a lie. Halloween, which is the worship of all saints, a purely pagan festival incorporated into Roman Catholicism, and Christmas, the Saturnella, the day that pagans celebrated the birth of the Son of the Sun, became the second holiest day on the Christian calendar. All of it rubbish, all of it pagan, all of it in direct contradiction to Yahweh's advice, and all of it to keep Christians from actually celebrating the days that Yahweh has invited us to meet with Him. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It is amazing if you go to like the Catholic Encyclopedia or a pro-Catholic site, and they know that they have no justification for changing Yah's schedule, the one he etched in stone regarding his Shabbat, to Sunday. And so when asked what credible justification do they have, almost universally the answer from Roman Catholics is, well, the Protestant churches followed our example. If it wasn't a good idea, why did they follow us? And indeed, Orthodox, Protestant, and evangelical congregations use the same terminology, celebrate the same days as were perpetrated by the sun god-worshipping Constantine. Still with Easter Sunday, still with Sunday worship services, still completely ignoring Yahweh's Shabbat, still treating God's seven called out assemblies as if they were evil days associated with those evil Jews, and presented in that evil Old Testament, particularly in the arcane and old-fashioned Torah. That's their mindset. And yet, everything that they're doing is Babylonian. The bottom line is that Christians are lost because their Sunday religion is based upon sun god worship. As such, Christians remain in Babylon. They have not heeded Yahweh's call to come out of her. They have not embraced the first step that we must accept if we wish to participate in the covenant. The covenant has five provisions. It has five terms and conditions The first of them is to walk out of Babylon, and yet what Christians have done is to walk right back in to its pagan mythology. To understand the truth, to know the Word, to be part of Yahweh's family, one must first walk away from the darkness, the deceit, the destruction, the death, and damnation of religion, from the schemes that were promoted throughout the millennia by the whore of Babylon. The light, the truth, the life, the way are all made manifest by the Word, and the Word of God is comprised of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. The seventh day, the Shabbat, the day to desist from our ordinary work to contemplate Yahweh's work, is the first of many lights God placed on the path to paradise, path to His home. Sunday is a day that reflects Satan's false light, and we must acknowledge that Hasatan, as a spiritual Moloch, as a messenger and envoy, is still brilliantly illuminated. If you were to see him as Paul did on the road to Damascus, you would see him as flashing light. That is how he will appear. And so the order of the illumes, the false light that Paul heard speak to him on the road to Damascus, all one and the same, Hasatan. He is the one who, with Paul, created the broad avenue which leads to death for some and to the abyss for those who carry the adversary's torch. In Babylon, there were four evil days each month. They were the 7th, they were the 14th, they were the 21st, and they were the 28th. Perhaps you noticed a pattern. Satan and his religious minions, particularly Paul, routinely condemn that which Yahweh commends. Sunday, the first day of the week, wasn't called Sunday for nothing. Before we move on, here is a snapshot of the two previous passages. Almighty God blessed and adored His association with the seventh day, and He set it apart because indeed He observed the Shabbat. On account of all of the heavenly work and the spiritual message, which by way of the relationship the Almighty had conceived and created, and then He had acted upon, engaging in His own message. These are the records of the birth and the genealogy of the spiritual realm and the material realm, when they were created in the day Yahweh, God Almighty, acted upon and engaged in both the material world and spiritual realm. These from the second chapter of Bereshith, 1 through 4. You may think that one day is as good as another. You may believe that God isn't troubled by the details and doesn't mind men exchanging His plan for one of their own. Then why do you suppose He told us His plan? Why do you suppose He said that I am extraordinarily focused upon my plan? Why did He say that this day is set apart? If He doesn't care, if He doesn't mind, if one day is good as another, then He lied. And why would you trust a lying God? Doesn't that sound a bit irrational to you? Welcome to Shattering Myths. I'm chuckling here because Scott and I were talking during the break. I asked him to check on something for me to find out if Nichols, McVeigh, and Ramzi Youssef were still alive or if they had been executed. And the answer is McVeigh has been executed, but that Ramzi Youssef and Nichols are both sharing the same cell block in a maximum security prison. It's an underground prison called ADX Florence in Florence, Colorado. And that there was a while, apparently, that McVeigh and Ramzi Youssef were in the same cell. And that even today they are Nichols and Yusuf are in the same cell block. The report is that Ramzi Yusuf tried to convert McVeigh to Islam, and that 7 years ago that Ramzi Yusuf himself converted to Christianity. Yeah, who knows what is true. I can tell you that Christianity is no better than Islam, and it is interesting that these two men who could tell us so much about the malfeasance of our own government are locked away in solitary confinement, hundreds of feet underground. Now, as we were talking in the last segment, Christians are almost universally irrational. They believe that one day is as good as another, that we should worship God every day, when God, in fact, says the antithesis of both points, that one day isn't as good as another. The Shabbat is the day that he set apart. It is the day that he himself celebrates. So God said exactly the opposite of that, and he also says that he does not want to be worshipped. He wants us to engage in a family-oriented relationship with him serving as Father, not Lord. And, of course, Christians, because of Pauline doctrine and their antagonism towards the Torah, which they view as a set of rules, say that God doesn't fret the details, that he really doesn't care about any of that sort of thing, because, after all, the detailed account in the Torah has been abrogated, it has been annulled, it has been destroyed by Paul, and now all that matters is that you believe. And so you can wipe away every bit of God's advice if you are a irrational Christian. You may consider Sunday as a substitute, you say, well, it's really unimportant because God knows the intent and purpose of my heart. You may justify Sunday by reasoning that since so many religious folks observe it, it can't be contrary to God. But to do so, you either have to be ignorant or irrational. Because, or you are intending to worship a God who isn't God. Because the God who proved that he is God through the prophecies presented in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms said that those things are an abomination to him, that he does not want to be worshipped, that the Lord, Satan, it's his goal to be worshipped. And that he says that his day is the Shabbat. If you don't understand and don't embrace everything associated with the Shabbat, then you don't know the real God. And if you're worshiping a God, it's a wannabe God. And the only spirit who wants to be God, who is not God, is Satan. Perhaps that's the object of your affection. Unaware of the redemptive significance of the special Shabbat and the fact that there are Shabbat associations with unleavened bread as well as with Yah's celebration of the ultimate Shabbat, Sukkah, you may think that Sunday worship is justified because of a supposed resurrection. And yet, Yahweh told you prophetically 500 to 1500 years before it occurred that there would be no bodily resurrection. He told you that the body of the sacrificial lamb would be incinerated that night. He told you what was going to happen on Passover, on unleavened bread, and on first fruits. He provided an eyewitness account 700 years in advance. 1,000 years in advance, depending on whether you're reading the 22nd Psalm, the 88th Psalm, written 1,100 years in advance, or you're reading Yeshayahu, written over 700 years in advance, but yet an eyewitness account of precisely what would happen on Passover, unleavened bread, and first fruits in year 4,000 Yah, 33 CE. And yet, As a Christian, you think, nothing important with the Shabbat. I'm going to celebrate and worship God on Sundays because there was a resurrection. You're not even going to read the text that you place your faith in, the so-called Christian New Testament. When if that was the seminal proof that the man that was killed was God, which is a rational impossibility, that man can kill God, why is it then that the only common thread between the three accounts of what happened on first fruits is that no one recognized him? If the idea was to prove that he came back from the dead, that he was raised bodily, then why isn't that the most recognizable figure in their lives wasn't recognizable by anyone? Why, if he was God and God was killed, did he say, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you left me? Why have you separated yourself from me before his body died? If the Shabbat is the day that God set apart and that he himself observes the Shabbat and it is the day where he does his work, and if Matzah is the most important day of the year, according to God, why is it that Christians ignore its significance entirely? Unaware what the Greek manuscripts composed by the eyewitnesses actually reveal, or that Yahweh's testimony reinforces the validity of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, you may errantly believe that the disciples themselves replaced the Shabbat with Sunday. There's no indication of that. Christians will say, but they gathered together on the first day of the week. There's only one time when they said that somebody was setting out for a journey, and before they set out for the journey, they met on the first day of the week. Didn't say that they worshipped. Didn't say that that is the day they celebrated. And to the direct opposite, they say that Yosha routinely observed the Shabbat, always observed the Shabbat, as did his disciples. Christianity will ignore the evidence, will contradict the evidence, will be irrational in face of the evidence, because the faith is torn asunder by Yosha and by Yahweh. Indoctrinated by religion and confused by Pauline doctrine, you may actually think that there is an institution that God established called the church, which is a name based upon Shirsh, the daughter of Helios, a pagan goddess, and that this human institution has been given the authority to establish doctrine, even change God's instructions as they see fit, even though God's Torah instructions say, don't take anything away from this, don't add anything to it. You may be so lost as to suppose that there is no rhyme nor reason to the Torah, that there is no more, but that is no more rational than the religions that have been spawned by the likes of Paul or by Muhammad. For you, the notion that it contains, that the Torah contains a mathematical equation that defines God's purpose, the pace and of his plan, how human history will unfold, when he was here, when he will return, what days that we meet with him, how we can walk from our troubled world to his home. All of that is conveyed by the Shabbat, the promise of seven, where man, in addition to God, is God's promise of perfection. All of that is lost when people don't listen to God. If you're one of those people that don't care about the details, to say, you know, I'm going to believe something that is irrational, that is impossible, that is easily refuted, that has no chance whatsoever of being true, Then Hosha, which means salvation, 4:6 was written for you. God said, my people, speaking in first person, that, by the way, is a distinction between Yahweh in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, where he speaks to us in first person, and the so-called Christian New Testament, comprised mostly of Paul's rhetoric, where it is Paul that speaks, never once quoting God in first person. My people, God said, are completely destroyed, and they will perish. They will be cut off and cease to exist. This was in the Niffle Perfect, telling us that the people have actually participated in their own and absolute demise because of a lack of understanding, Bele. Because of corrupted information, inadequate knowledge, and deficient discernment. Because indeed you have totally avoided and rejected Ma'as, you have spurned and despised, you've literally refused and disdained. This is in the Call Perfect, revealing that the avoidance was complete and that the rejection here is literal. Knowledge and understanding, diat, information and discernment. So then, I will consistently reject and avoid you, Ma'as. Those who Ma'as God, who spurn and despise, refuse and disdain the knowledge which leads to understanding that he has provided, are treated in kind. It is ultimately fair. God says, speaking in first person, of those who do not like, who do not consider, who do not observe his Torah instructions, then I will consistently reject you and avoid you, Ma'as. I will actually disassociate from you, and I will rebuff you. We'll be back to the conclusion of Shattering Myths in a moment. Welcome back to the final segment of Shattering Myths for today. If you are a religious individual, if you are a person who does not observe the Torah, to observe, by the way, does not mean to keep, it does not mean to obey. It means to use your eyes to examine and use your mind to consider. If you do not observe the Torah, reading it, studying it, thinking about it, this statement is for you. It is from God. He is speaking to you in first person. He is telling you what is going to happen to you based upon your current animosity for his Torah. So don't say you weren't warned. My people, God created all people. My people are completely destroyed and they will perish. They are cut off and will cease to exist. Didn't say that they're going to be eternally tormented in hell. He said quite the opposite. They're going to be destroyed. They will perish. They will cease to exist. The vast majority of souls, particularly those victimized by religion, cease to exist at the end of their mortal lives. This was written in the Niffle Perfect, which means to say you have no one to blame but yourself. You brought this on yourself. My people are just completely destroyed and they will perish because of a lack of understanding. Did he say a lack of faith? No. In fact, there's probably no word more further removed from faith and belief than Bele. It means that they are destroyed. Their souls will cease to exist because they lack understanding. Because they have processed corrupted information. Read Paul's letters. They have inadequate knowledge because they have not considered the antidote for religion, which is the Torah. They have deficient discernment because even when told the truth, they don't process it. Indeed, because you have totally avoided and rejected, you have spurned and despised, refused and disdained, and that is the attitude that Christians and Muslims have, even socialist secular humanists have, for Yah's Torah, for his source of answers, for his source of teaching, for his instructions, because you have totally avoided and rejected, spurned and despised, refused and disdained knowledge and understanding, information which leads to discernment. So then, as a consequence, I will reject and avoid you. I will actually disassociate from you and will rebuff you. Call him perfect. Literally, genuinely, actually, and on an ongoing basis. For those who say, God knows the content of of my heart, don't sweat the details, it'll all work out in the end, God is saying, no. You chose to disdain my instructions. You didn't bother to understand what I was offering. And so I'm here to tell you that as a result, I will avoid all association with you. Since you have continually ignored, you have consistently overlooked, and have forgotten, you have lost sight of the significance of and responded improperly to. This was written in the call imperfect consecutive, which tells us that this is something that is actual, not hypothetical, imperfect, that is on an ongoing basis, and consecutive, it was your choice. Because you have chosen to ignore continually and consistently, literally and actually, the Torah of your God, the instruction and teaching of your God, God's source of guidance and direction. I also will consistently ignore your children. This is the consequence of religion, my friends. Those who have spurned Yas Torah, which would be virtually 100% of socialist secular humanists, America's national religion and the national religion of the West, would include all Muslims and all Christians. Those who have spurned and despised the Torah, they will be eternally distanced from God. At the end of their mortal lives, God has said that you will be destroyed, you will perish, you will cease to exist. That is the consequence for ignoring, choosing deliberately to ignore God's instructions. But because you have ignored the Torah, the same thing will happen with your children. They also will be ignored by God, not because of God's doing, because of your doing. You have misled them in your religion. You have taken them away from God. So as a consequence of ignoring His instructions, His Torah, your children too will suffer your fate, something that you have done to them. I'm Yada, this is Shattering Myths, back again tomorrow.
Many Americans suffer from digestive problems, often totally unaware they're not absorbing essential nutrients from foods and supplements. Dr. Peter Glidden is aware of the importance...